who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. And it goes on, Krishna goes on for a few more verses, describing this wonderful quality of a devotee, that he sees things equally. Not that he sees them as one, but he understands that all of them have equal use in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that vision, he's able to appreciate everyone. He's self-satisfied in his relationship with Krishna. And because he's self-satisfied in that relationship with Krishna, he doesn't need anything else. Therefore, he doesn't have any ego or false pride. Because he doesn't need profit, adoration, and distinction, or he doesn't think he needs profit, adoration, and distinction in order to become happy. He's already happy. He's already satisfied in his relationship with the Supreme Lord. And because of that, he's able to fully engage in the service of Krishna without becoming disturbed by, in this case, pride or envy. Whereas someone like Durvasa Muni, because he wasn't completely satisfied in a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord, he was a Brahmanandi. And because of the fact that he didn't have a loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he was able to go and speak to all these great personalities, even Vishnu himself, he was not satisfied in that loving relationship. He didn't have that loving relationship. And therefore, he was unable to achieve that level of satisfaction, that level of equanimity, that he didn't need to prove his superiority. When he came in contact with Ambarish, Maharaj Ambarish, he was unable to appreciate his great level of spiritual advancement. Now, Durvasa Muni learned a lesson, and Prabhupada speaks about how he learned it. He said when he was persecuted by the Sudarshan Chakra, his intelligence developed. We could all get our intelligence developed that way, because we're, just like Mother Mukhi was reading that quote today, before the announcement, when the announcements were made before this class, very appropriate, that when we exist in the material world, we're constantly getting lessons. Devotees, they see the suffering that they get living in the material world as a token of what they deserve by Krishna's mercy. They look at their lives and they think, I'm such a fallen, miserable person. I've done so many sinful activities that actually I deserve to suffer much more than I'm suffering. But Krishna is so kind that he's mitigated that suffering to teach me what I need to know, and he's eliminated much of what I was supposed to suffer out of his causeless mercy. So I should learn the lesson that I'm being taught, and be grateful. At the same time, have an attitude of gratitude to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for adjusting things according to my needs so that I can learn appropriately. In the position of the guru, also we hear, guru means heavy, we hear, and the guru is like, is a cutting, he has a cutting nature sometimes, that in order to teach the disciple, he may be a little bit sharp, and spiritual life is compared to that of a razor's edge, right? One slip, you get cut. So many, many times we hear that we have an opportunity to learn from these kinds of experiences, and we have an opportunity to not learn. So a first-class person, Prabhupada explains, he learns without having to go through major upheavals in his life. He sees those upheavals as a learning experience, gratefully received, but he doesn't need them to learn. He learns from because he has good intelligence. He hears, he has some faith, and he moves forward in his spiritual life. As one moves away from that first-class position, the lessons have to become stronger and stronger and stronger before he gets it. And sometimes he doesn't even get it, right? Sometimes we understand from Prabhupada that somebody may have such a low level of intelligence that even though he experiences great difficulty, suffering, he doesn't learn the lesson. And he keeps committing the same stupid activities again and again, again and again, again and again. Someone's raising their hand in the back. It's me. I can raise my hand in the front. It's me. So we have that choice repeatedly in our spiritual life. Are we going to learn from the situation or not? So Devasa Muni, he learned from the school of hard knocks, quite literally, in the sense that he had this fiery wheel chasing him all over the place. He tried everything he could think of by all his power. He tried to mitigate that situation, but he was unable. And the abilities that Durvasa Muni had, they were achieved by, at least he understood them to be achieved, by his own prowess. He performed various austerities. He was very qualified as a yogi. He had learned, he was very learned in the scriptures. He was very highly respected among sages. And he had achieved the ability to dialogue with very, very senior persons in the celestial hierarchy, right? He was able to just go and visit Lord Shiva, and, you know, maybe Lord Shiva was even busy, or Lord Brahma was even busy, but he was in an emergency situation, so he just kind of barged in and said, listen to me, I need your help. And he was given audience, although he wasn't given necessarily the solution that he wanted. He was definitely given audience. And even to the point of coming in contact with Vishnu, he was able to have a conversation with Vishnu and say, hey, listen, I've got a problem, you know, maybe you can do something about it, because your Sudarshan Chakra is giving me a pain, and I need a little relief from that suffering. But even that didn't work. And so finally, he was forced to come to the realization that there was nothing he could do, nothing within his power, that would mitigate his suffering. And so his intelligence became awakened, and he got the point that in order to be free from the suffering condition, he would have to take shelter at the lotus feet of someone who had received the favor, the true favor of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was going to have to take a humble position. We read in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and also in Sri Upanishad, the 10th mantra, that one result is you get from the process of nescience, another result you get from the process of knowledge. And the process of knowledge is described in great detail in both of those places. And in order to achieve that process, or in order to embark on that process, one has to have a certain degree of humility, of understanding that they are unable on their own to achieve the perfection that they desire. It's not possible. So Durvasa Muni, he didn't have that level of realization. And by Ambarish Maharaj's mercy, he was able to get it. So therefore, he became very indebted. He mentions here that you overlook my offenses, you save my life, and thus I've become very obliged to you because you are so merciful. And what is that mercy of a pure devotee? Because really, Ambarish didn't, he didn't give him anything. He didn't say, oh, you can have half my kingdom, or you can have some wealth, or here's a benediction, a blessing. But he removed the obstacle, the main obstacle, on the path of Devasa's spiritual understanding. And the main obstacle was not the Sudarshan Chakra that was chasing him, although that was the thing he was feeling that made him think a little bit, that made him conscious, that made him learn the lesson. The actual suffering, or the actual obstacle that Durvasa Muni was facing, was his pride. That he was unable to appreciate the glories of such a great devotee as Ambarish and Maharaj. And at some times, that Prabhupada points out here, that sometimes we're unable to appreciate the value of a great devotee. It's very difficult for us to see. We're so clouded over by our own desire for fame and wealth and beauty, etc., 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 that we don't see the value of the great devotees, the unassuming value. It's interesting that very time in the material world, we look for, and even in our spiritual practice and devotional practice, we look for our advancement to be recognized. And generally, or quite often, that recognition comes in the form of being given positions of responsibility. We move up the ladder of administration sometimes, or recognition sometimes, that, you know, we walk into a room and everybody has to hit the floor when we walk in there. And sometimes we're served on better plates than everybody else. Everybody else gets paper, but we get stainless steel or maybe even silver. And we get to sit on a little bit higher seat, a few inches higher, softer cushion maybe. We get a garland. Someone maybe chants our name at the end of a class and throws, or we get applause. Somehow we get accolades, and we feel like, oh, now advancement has finally come, and people are recognizing that I'm making advancement, or I am advanced. And these very things can be the cause of our fall down. These very things are the poison which can kill us, or at least very much stunt our growth. It's kind of like allopathic medicine, you know? You take some of the medicine, it cures one thing, but it gives you another something, and usually the other something is more dangerous than the first thing. It takes away the headache, but it, you know, destroys your kidneys. So now you don't have a headache, but you don't have kidneys either. You have to go on dialysis. So many things like that we find in the material world, that what looks like a perk or looks like a benefit actually is a cause of trouble. And when Krishna puts us into difficulty, he's actually helping us, encouraging us to move forward in our spiritual life. We see that Queen Kunti was able to understand that. And she appreciated that. Thank you for this misery. Thank you for these calamities. Because when there's calamities, then I take shelter of you. But very often when there's calamities, we don't take shelter of Krishna. It takes a lot to get us to take shelter of Krishna. Sometimes we even get mad at Krishna. Several times I've been giving class at the Gainesville Preaching Center, and several times we've been asked, why is it that Krishna makes suffering in the material world? Why can't, he's such a together God, and he's so capable. Why doesn't he make our life in the material world more comfortable? Then it would be easier for us to love him, because we love people who make things nice. But it's not necessarily true that we love people who make things nice. We love people who make things nice as long as they keep making things nice. And if there's any difficulty there, then we immediately become frustrated or angry. Even as a teacher, they tell you, you shouldn't give rewards all the time. You should give intermittent rewards. Because if you give rewards all the time, then the minute a student does something that, and you don't give a reward, they get angry with you. Well, wait a minute. Hey, come on. You gave us this thing. Every time I got an A so far, you gave me this thing. Now I got an A and you didn't give me it. You can go bankrupt that way. And you become, one performs for the reward as opposed to the inherent benefit or the internal benefit of the activity. So since the activity that we're engaged in, pure devotional service, is designed to get us to come to a selfless position, a position where we have no other desire except to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then practically material rewards are counterproductive. If we become addicted to those material rewards and we perform for them, they become counterproductive because they give us the false illusion that we're somebody. And the whole lesson we're supposed to learn in the material world is that we're very small, that we're servant of the servant of the servant. Lord Brahma, he was in a very unique position. If we remember back in the second canto in the ninth chapter, Lord Brahma, he was being deputed to create the universe. And he needed some information, actually recreate the universe. It wasn't even the first time. But he needed some help from his friends. And so, especially Lord Vishnu, and therefore he performed austerity, and he asked some questions of Lord Vishnu to please guide him in how to create the universe. And the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam was spoken. But one of the questions, or one of the fears that Lord Brahma expressed at that time was that, you know, I'm really afraid that I'm engaged in this very, very responsible position. I'm creator of the universe. And I might become prideful. I might become a little puffed up. And if I do that, then everything will be spoiled. So how is it that I can do this very valuable service for you? Because I want to do it for you. I want to do it. Not only do I want to do it, but I want to do it well. I want to do it to the best of my ability. But at the same time, I want to understand that all the ability that I have and the materials that I'm using in this service, they're all coming from you. And I don't want to become affected by pride. So what can I do in order to avoid a prideful situation. And Krishna answers him by saying that in all times, in all circumstances, you should think of me and engage in my service. He tells this to Arjuna too, Mamanu Smara Yujata. Fight and think of me. Remember that every single qualification that you have, that every thing that you're using is a gift from me. It's coming from me. Everything comes from me. Your ability comes from me. I'm the ability in man, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So if we constantly remembering that and passing our recognition up to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, instead of accepting it and swallowing it and choking on it, it's better that we pass it up. Because if we pass it up, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master, will pass it up to Krishna, and Krishna can digest it. It's very difficult for anyone else below them to digest it. And it can become a fatal diet. So Ambarish, by the mercy of the Sudarshan Chakra, and by the mercy of Durvasa Muni, by the mercy of Krishna, and by the mercy of Ambarish, he learned this very valuable lesson, at least for this moment, he learned it. And he was able to act appropriately with Ambarish now. And it's interesting also, even as I read this, I'm not qualified to give purports on the Bhagavatam, but you know, you read it and he says, well, first he ate and then he invited Ambarish to eat, and you think, maybe he didn't quite get it. You know, he got it to some extent, but you feel this in the verses, I feel it in the verses of the Bhagavatam, that Durvasa Muni still had some kind of understanding that he was better, best, more better, whatever accolades you want to give him. But still, he did come to the point where he was able to apologize to Ambarish, that he was able to grab Ambarish's feet, and Ambarish even felt uncomfortable with that. You know, I'm embarrassed, you're such a great sage, and who am I? I'm just a king, I'm lower rank than you are, and then you're grabbing my feet. So Ambarish was actually embarrassed by all the respect that he got from Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni was able to make some spiritual advancement. His intelligence became awakened. And because his intelligence became awakened, he was able to see things as they are. So we can ask ourselves in our own spiritual life, how much do we have to get burned for our intelligence to get awakened? How close does the Sudarshan Chakra have to come to the rear part of the body in order for us to kind of wake up and realize that we're very, very small, very, very insignificant, and that anything that we're able to do, anything we have, any ability, any materials even, they're all coming from Krishna. And the knowledge of Krishna, the knowledge that we state, the knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's coming to us from Srila Prabhupada, from our spiritual master. Without hearing from the spiritual master, we would know nothing. Right? We would know nothing. We wouldn't know how to offer anything to Krishna. We wouldn't know who Krishna was. We wouldn't know the Bhagavad Gita. We wouldn't know the purport of the verses. So many people are reading so many different Bhagavad Gitas. So many people are chanting kirtan now. It's very popular. They're chanting it everywhere. Right? The holy name. It's being chanted. But they're not getting it somehow. They're not surrendering to Krishna. They're not taking up the process of devotional service necessarily. Because they don't have guidance from a bona fide spiritual master who's willing to take risks in order to give transcendental knowledge. Risks means that somebody may have to hear something they don't think they want to hear. They may have to take up a process that's a little uncomfortable for them to take up. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Wait a minute, that's too hard, it's impossible, Lord Zetlin said, right? I can't do that. Okay, well, it's my duty to tell you what it is you ask me, make you a Brahmin. You ask me to help you make spiritual advancement. I'm going to give you the absolute truth, whether you like it or not, whether you take it or not. If your intelligence becomes inspired by the burning fire of material existence, then you'll have the information, you'll know what to do. And that's our obligation, to give Krishna consciousness in its pure form so that people will take up the process of spiritual life. my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he was strong with people sometimes. He would give Krishna consciousness in a very pure form, and he didn't mince words. Of course, he was in a unique position because he was a pure devotee and he could deliver the message in such a way that people would still respect him and still find shelter in his words. But we also have to find the way to deliver the essence. Deliver the essence. We have to not only deliver small aspects of it, but we have to give the essence of Krishna consciousness, that we are spirit soul, and that our happiness lies in connecting with the Supreme Lord as a servant, as an insignificant servant. This is the unique teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the ultimate pleasure that we're looking for in this material, in this existence, in our existence as a spirit soul, the ultimate pleasure that we want comes from being a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and serving him with all humility. That will give us the highest pleasure. The messages we receive in the material world are diametrically opposed to that. And so our intelligence has to become inspired. And Krishna will arrange for the sincere soul to be inspired even up to the point of sending the Sudarshan Chakra chasing after them to inspire that intelligence to wake up. So we can learn by adopting the process of knowledge as described in the Bhagavad Gita that starts with humility. But if the humility is absent, then we might have to have a different process of knowledge. And that process of knowledge may have to be inspired by the fire of material existence burning us, and then becoming our intelligence becoming awakened. So I'll end there. If there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mataji. I always remember, you know, when I talked to you after I came back from India, that I went to, you know, send Mata Sachi, you know, to her final journey. That you told me, never forget that lesson that you just got from Krishna. And I always, you know, even if painful enough that is, you know, to see, you know, that video of Srila Prabhupada's last lesson, final lesson, you know, because it's not pretty, but it's very profound, you know, to see, you know, how Srila Prabhupada, you know, until the last minute gave us all these instructions. So I'm kind of bewildered, you know, especially in these chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because we are in the position of being very careful, you know, not to criticize, but at the same time, you know, as grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, you know, we're in the position of trying to defend his legacy and his ultimate position as the Acharya of Bhakti. So I'm just wondering, you know, how can you do both things, you know, without getting into trouble?
It's not easy. It's not easy because, first of all, we have to look at our adhikar, because we have a certain degree of qualification, a certain degree of credit, and we can only spend in relation to that credit. If we spend beyond that credit, beyond that adhikar, we get ourselves in trouble. Prabhupada had unlimited adhikar, so did Ambarish. Ambarish Maharaj, he could just stand there when that fiery demon came, you know, and he didn't even move. He just stood there with his hands folded. He could fast for 2 years, and he could maintain the respect. This is another point that I wanted to make, but there was no time, is that the great devotee, Durvasa Muni, noticed, you were able to be concerned about my welfare even though I tried to hurt you. Even though I was, on one level, your enemy, I tried to kill you. And even though I tried to kill you, you still wanted my welfare. when we become that qualified, then you know, we're not subject to difficulty. But until we become that qualified, we have to be very careful. And sometimes Krishna puts us in positions where we have to do things that are dangerous. We have to take risks. And sometimes we're not successful. We even get hurt. But sometimes we have to take that risk anyway, because it's what we have to do. On the other hand, the best defense is a good offense. So if we want to defend Srila Prabhupada's mission, then the best thing to do to defend Prabhupada's mission is to follow his instruction and become so qualified. So, because even Durvasa Muni, who was treating Ambarish very poorly, more poorly than we're able to treat anybody. I mean, we can't, you know, if we get mad at somebody, maybe we could yell at them, maybe we could shake our fist at them, maybe we could destroy some of their, you know, their paraphernalia by beating it over the head with a stick. But we're not able to, you know, throw a piece of hair on the ground and come up with a fiery demon to chase them off. You know, we can't do those things. But still, we can offend people, we can hurt people, and we have to be very, very, very careful how we administer difficulty. But Durvasa Muni, even though he was so powerful and so able to cause distress to another person that he saw as being offensive or unqualified, he was able to get it just by watching Ambarisha's impeccable behavior. It took him a little while, a few chapters, and a few trips around the universe. But by seeing Ambarish Maharaj's impeccable behavior, his heart became changed, and he was able to act appropriately. So that's the best way that we can preserve Srila Prabhupada's mission, by acting in such a way that Prabhupada becomes proud, that his movement become, you know, there's that really nice story. It's a story from the Talmud, actually, so it's in my tradition, where there were, you know, there was a monastery, and these priests were carrying out their business at the monastery, and originally many people would come there because it was a beautiful place and it was very endowed with many, many natural gifts, and people would come there. And in coming there, they would also pray and they would offer some contributions and some people would join. So in this way, the monastery was going on for years and years. But then eventually things started to decline and no one was coming, and the place was becoming more and more deserted, and the priests were becoming very old, like us, becoming very old. And no one was joining, and people were stopping to come. They would go for their picnic, but they wouldn't come to the monastery. So one of the older monks there, he heard that there was a very wise sage, they say rabbi, was in the cave, and he was doing meditation, and he was going to go to him, and he was going to ask him what to do. So he went there, and he approached him with all humility, and they were so happy to see each other, because both could appreciate that spirituality was declining as the age of Kali was progressing. People were less intelligent, less spiritually inclined, fighting with each other for nothing. Mandak sumandan, let's tell you what to do. So they talked for so long, and they were so happy to be with each other. But then finally, the monk, he said, I have to go back to the monastery. And you know, actually, I came here for a reason. And in talking to you, I neglected to ask you the question that I came here to ask you. So let me ask you this question. You know, we have this problem. People are no longer coming. And what should we do? What do you think we can do? So the sage, he answered, you come back in a few days and I'll tell you. So then he went and he came back. And when he came back, the sage was crying. And he said, really, you know, I prayed and I thought about it, and I didn't come up with any real answer. But I came up with one thing. And the one thing I realized is that one of you living in that monastery is the next Messiah. But that's all I know. I can't give you any concrete suggestion. So that monk left, and he was thinking in his mind, what does that mean? One of us is the next Messiah. You know, Father Jacob, he's a good cook, and he's got a nice sense of humor, and he's pretty pretty absorbed in spiritual life, but I never thought of him as being a Messiah. And Father Jonathan, well, you know, he's very quiet. He hardly ever talks to anybody, but he's always very responsible about coming to his prayers. And surely it couldn't be me. I mean, I had so many. And he was considering like this, like this, like this. And then he thought, he told all the other members, and they started thinking like this. And in their thought, they started treating each other with so much respect and so much concern, because they thought, well, what if he's the next Messiah? I certainly don't want to offend him. I better act very nicely. I mean, what if it's me and I'm not living up to my vows? I better take my vows very seriously. So in this way, the mood, the atmosphere, the relationships between the people, it changed completely. And people started dealing with each other in such a wonderful way that people started coming for their picnic, and they were seeing how the monks were dealing with each other, and they thought, wow, I want to go in there. I want to talk to those people. I want to ask them about the problems in my life. And then gradually things started to come back alive, and people were joining again, and the rest is history. So that's, I think, the best answer. Hare Krishna. One more Parijata Prabhu. Microphone is on its way. Why is it not important?
Generally speaking, in order to develop any spiritual intelligence, we have to surrender, like Krishna said, Tesham Sakati Yuktanam. So with the Vasamuni, it seems like he didn't surrender, yet Krishna gave him intelligence. Doesn't mean, well, he's a special person, obviously, but that he maybe only got it temporarily, and then he was...
But Krishna also says, all of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, right? So, a little bit of surrender, a little bit of realization, a lot of surrender, a lot of realization, more surrender, more realization, love and devotion, the most realization. Surrender means acting in love and devotion. Devasa didn't have that. Even here, he didn't have it. But he did have some surrender. Surrender. He fell at the lotus feet of Ambarish. And... Huh? That took surrender, and it was surrender. It was a symptom of surrender. And Krishna is always looking for the good. Just like Srila Prabhupada was always looking for the good. Even when we did something stupid, Srila Prabhupada would see that we were trying. He overlooked the difficulties as much as he could before it became so loud that it couldn't plug his ears anymore. But generally speaking, Krishna looks for the good. And he sees a little bit of effort, he sees a little bit of responsibility, he immediately reciprocates. Right? We see Jagai and Madhai, they were so bad. Right? And they were also Brahmins, they were well endowed in terms of Janmaishwarya, Shruta Shri. But they didn't take advantage of that, and they acted like idiots. You know, they were doing all kinds of horrible things. So Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya bestowed mercy upon them. We heard yesterday or the other day. When Lord Chaitanya embraced them, they fainted to the ground. They were dirty, they were... drinking. They had just met Lord Chaitanya and gotten the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. And they had a place right across, very close to Shriva Sangam on the bank of the Ganga. So they were hearing the kirtan. They were making fun of the kirtan when the chanting was going on. So they were making fun. And the devotees were terrified of them. When Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu had to go and preach to them, the devotees were thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to you? And all the people in the town were saying, don't go after those two. Those two are incorrigible. But they went anyway, Haridas Thakur a little bit reluctantly. But then when they got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they got the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, and they fell, they were taken into Shriva Sangam for the kirtan. They were bodily carried by the devotees. Now, Shiva Sangam was not an easy place to get in, right? Even that brahmachari who was only drinking milk, he got thrown out. He wasn't allowed. Very selective people were allowed in there. They were very careful, and Lord Chaitanya was very sensitive if the wrong type of person entered into that kirtan. But these two pathetic souls who had tortured and maimed and stolen and drunk and cursed and hit Nityananda Prabhu with a pot, when they got the mercy of the devotee, immediately they were taken in. The devotees carried them in to the kirtan. It's described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So Durvasa Muni, whatever his qualification or disqualification, he got the mercy. He got the mercy of Ambarish. And therefore he was benedicted with realization. Now how long he keeps that is up to him. Okay, I see. Yeah.
Does Durvasa Muni represent some particular disqualification eternally, or does it refresh my memory? Does he eventually ever serve a devotee
He's very instrumental in Krishna's pastimes. He helps a lot of things along. You know, I mean, he's used many, many times in Krishna's pastimes too. I think Dhruva Maharaj gave a whole liturgy of different activities of Durvasa Muni where he helped in Krishna's pastimes. So he does have a prominent place in the Bhagavatam and in Krishna's Lila.
But actually demonstrating on your service attitude per se?
Well, he was generous. I mean, he gave Kunti a benediction, which resulted in the birth of Karna, and also all the Pandavas. So he was also, he was easily angered because he was a partial representative of Lord Shiva. So you have that same kind of dynamic where easily angered and easily gives benedictions. Sometimes things go awry. Durvasa Muni is a unique personality. Anyone who can go see Lord Vishnu is a unique personality. I should end now, it's late. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.